For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is November the 15th, and we are in Parshas Balak on page 866. We're really up to Pasuk Yud Gimel verse 13, which will begin the second attempt of Balak and Bilam to curse the Jewish people. Before we do that, we have to go back to Pasuk Yud verse 10 and explain something which we left off with last time. The pasuk there says in the bracha that Bilam is giving to the Jewish people, Mi mana afar Yaakov, who can count the dust of Yaakov, umisparis rova Yisrael, and another word for count, the way they say it in the English is numbered a quarter of Israel. Rova from the word quarter, like revi'i, same word, a quarter of the Jewish people. But since the Jews were divided up into four camps, so who can count even a quarter of the Jewish people? Tamos nafshi mos yesharim, my soul should die, the death of the righteous, usi acharisi kamohu, my future should be like them, my end should be like them. I mentioned to you last time that there's another way to read rova Yisrael. Rova, the word revia can also mean a form of a physical relationship. The word rova is used with bestiality. The word rova could also be used even between two human beings. Sometimes that word is used. And therefore, the word rova refers specifically to seed. And the Bilam is saying, who can count the dust of Yaakov? And who can count the rova Yisrael? And Chazal tell us that Bilam was saying that he saw in his prophecy that Hashem, so to speak, kiviyachol, sits and examines the seed of the Jewish people and waits for one that will produce a tzaddik. So when Bilam saw this, Bilam said, how is it possible, mishahu kadosh, someone who is sanctified, umisharsav kidoshim, and those who serve him are sanctified, how could he be involved in such a thing? It seems so mundane. It seems so maybe disgusting. How could he be involved in such a thing? Bilam couldn't accept that. He couldn't accept that Hashem does this, that he examines the seed. It doesn't seem right. So it was something Bilam he couldn't allow that thought to be something to be true in his mind. So Chazal tell us, we will find later on that Bilam is going to, we will discover later that he is blind in one eye. Chazal tell us he became blind because of this. Since he said, how could it be that Hashem's kiviyachol, so to speak, examines the seed? Therefore, he became blind. He lost the sight of one eye. Incidentally, we see that Bilam in this whole episode here, first he lost the use of one leg when the donkey smashed him against the wall, and now he loses the use of one eye. He's slowly being destroyed physically by this whole process. But that is what he could not accept. I'd like to read you the Rashi about it. The Rashi is not here. The Rashi.
Was it on the same side?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if we know which side it was on. It's a good question. Amar Belibo, he said in his heart, Mishahu Kadosh, of someone who is sanctified, Umishar Sav Kedoshim, and those who attend him are sanctified. Yistakel Bidvarim Mahalalo, he would look at such a thing? That's what he looks at. So because he couldn't accept that, Valdavar zeh nismis eino shel Bilhum. Because of this, the eye of Bilhum became blind. Because since he questioned, how could Hashem look at such a thing? Therefore, his eye became blind. Now this reaction of Bilhum and the fact that he's wrong, that Hashem does examine this sort of thing, highlights a major point in which brings out really something we've already spoken about, which is the question of why is it that Hashem gave a Navi, a prophet, to the non-Jews like Bilhum, and he's such a terrible person. So we explained that he gave them a Navi because this way, at the end of time, when we are being rewarded and they complain, it's not fair, we didn't have a prophet. So Hashem says, I gave you a prophet. Not only did I give you a prophet, I gave you one that is on the level of the greatest, the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. And not only did he not help you, he actually destroyed you, as we will see. So we explained last time that, what does that mean? So then how does that deal with their complaint? It's one thing if Hashem would have given them a tzaddik, but he gave them a rasha. And the answer is Hashem is showing them that they can't handle the prophecy. The prophecy corrupted Bilhum. Bilhum would have been a good person had he not been a prophet, or maybe he wouldn't have been as bad of a person, let's put it that way. But the nevuah corrupted him, as opposed to someone like Moshe Rabbeinu, where the nevuah only made him greater. But the nevuah corrupted Bilhum. And that's because he really wasn't on the level. And the non-Jews, by and large, are not on the level to be able to handle, that kind of intense prophecy. And instead it corrupted them. So here we're going to find highlighted another difference between the Jews and the non-Jews. Yes?
I was saying, why would it corrupt them? You know, here you have something good, and you know it turns not so good.
Right, because the what prophecy is a revelation of Hashem. That's what it is. It's an open revelation of Hashem to the person who's receiving the prophecy. Sometimes it takes the form of words that should be repeated to someone or to a people or whatever it is. And sometimes it's just a closeness, a revelation between the person and Hashem. A revelation between a person and Hashem when the person is ready for that. A person has grown, has become, has mastered their own evil inclination, has become a person who is seeking growth. When a person is on that trajectory and they receive a revelation from Hashem, that only helps boost them further. But when a person is not really ready for it, then the fact that they had a revelation from Hashem, and that included for Bilhum an ability that no one else had, because he now had an insight into when does Hashem get angry. That insight and the ability to use it for his own personal gain, he could not handle. He could not say to himself, no, don't use it. It's not right. Once he had the ability to manipulate others and become wealthy and powerful and famous, he couldn't help it. That was it corrupted him. It was something he was unable to stop that. So I don't want to absolve him. I don't want to say that it was absolutely impossible, but it was overwhelming to him. It was something which is just overwhelming. Here we find another point that is highlighted that between Jews and non-Jews, which is something that we've spoken about before and is actually well developed. And that is that for the non-Jews, the concept of sanctity, the concept of holiness is there. They believe in sanctity, they believe in holiness, and they can achieve levels of sanctity and holiness. However, in their minds, what is sanctified and what is holy is one thing, and what is mundane is another thing. And the two are separated. You can't combine the two. There's the upper spiritual realm, there's the lower physical realm, And the two do not combine. You're either in one or you're in the other. You either are a holy, sanctified person, and if you are, then you are completely and totally removed from the way human beings deal with this world. You are at least separated from human beings in a big way, maybe even like a hermit, but you're away from the regular interactions of human beings. You stay away from physical things, and you pursue a life of spirituality. Or a person is a physical person, is involved in this world, is involved in all the physical things of this world. But it can't be both. Now we know that that's not the way that we pursue spirituality. We don't pursue spirituality in that way. There is one day a year that we do that, and that is on Yom Kippur, where we attempt to be as spiritual as possible, and we try to stay away from everything physical as much as we possibly can. I mean, a human being is always going to be somewhat physical, but to whatever extent we can, we stay away from the physical. That's on Yom Kippur. But the rest of the year, we know that the way that we pursue spirituality is not to the exclusion of physicality, but rather it is to imbue the physicality with spirituality. And that's why we, and only we, are capable of having a Shabbos meal that is sanctified. And we're capable of eating well and drinking well and enjoying ourselves in a spiritual experience. We're the only ones who have the ability to do that. Just as that is true for eating, it is true for all physical pursuits. And therefore, the physical relationship between a husband and a wife is also no less capable of sanctity. But we're the only people who have the ability to bring sanctity into that experience. Bilam was unable to see that. To him, it's not possible. If Hashem is sanctified, how could he be looking at and examining seed? Now, Bilam wasn't a fool. Hashem created everything. He created everything physical. What do you mean Hashem can't be looking at it? What does that mean? Because in Bilam's mind, Hashem is sanctified. Hashem is spiritual. He may have created the physical, but that's not his realm. His realm is upstairs. He's not downstairs. And therefore, he would not be examining something like that. As far as we're concerned, what's the problem? Why can't he? He created it. There is sanctity in everything, including that. And he's looking for sanctity in the physical. And this also, as I said, highlights this difference between Jews and non-Jews. So Bilam, just as he could not really handle the intense prophetic experience, he also could not handle finding out that Hashem is just as present in mundane physical acts as he is in what we'd consider to be purely spiritual things. And that was something which was beyond Bilam. And because of this, because he questioned it, he lost his sight in one eye.
So how came it late? What was Hashem saw? He was mad because of what?
He was what?
He was mad.
He wasn't mad.
I mean, he was upset that God... What was he saying? The seed?
Yeah, he was examining the seed to see which one would produce a tzaddik.
Okay, alright.
And that's what Bilam could not handle.
Okay.
Right. Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Vayomer Elav Balak. Balak said to him, Lechana iti... Go now with me, El Makom Acher, to another place. Asher Tirenu Misham, that you will see him, meaning the Jews, from there. Efes Katseyu Sira. However, you only see a part of the Jews. V'chulo Lo Sira. You will not see all of them. Kavna li misham, and curse him, curse the Jews for me from there. I'm going to bring you to another area from where you can see only part of the Jewish people. Now earlier, if you hold the place here, turn back one page. Actually, I'm sorry, two pages. To page 862. The first place they went to in Pasuk Mem Aleph verse 41. It says, Vayhiva Boger was in the morning, Vaykach Balak es Bilam, Balak took Bilam, Vayalehu Bamos Baal, he took him to this place called Bamos Baal, Vayar Misham Kitsei Ha'am, and he saw from there a portion of the people. Here, the implication is that now Balak is taking him to a place where he'll only see a portion of the people. The implication is that last time Bilam was looking at all the people. So, the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra explain that when it says here, you'll see from Bamos Baal a portion of the people on page 862. That just meant where they were standing at that point, they could see a portion of the people, which means they were in position where Bilam could then go and see the entire nation, which is what they wanted, because they wanted Bilam to curse the entire nation. When Bilam then walked off on his own, which is in Pasuk Gimel in verse 3 on page 864, where it says at the end of that Pasuk, Vayelech Shefi, and he went off on his own, quietly, there he went off to a place where he could see the entirety of the Jewish people. And when he attempted to curse, it turned into a bracha. Here, Balak is saying, okay, that didn't work, so let me take you to another place where you will not be able to see all the Jewish people. Only some of the Jewish people. Then maybe you'll be able to curse the Jewish people. Perhaps last time it didn't work because you were trying, it was too much. You bit off more than you could chew. You were trying to curse all the Jewish people, and maybe that Hashem is not going to let you do. But a small portion of the Jewish people, perhaps that will work. So he takes him to a new place. Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, where is the new place? Vayikachehu sedei tzofim. He took him to the field of tzofim. Tzofim means the watchers, those who look to see if there's an enemy coming. This high up area where you can see out and see where, what's happening out in the, on the plain. El Rosh HaPisgah, to the top of the cliff, I think. How do they say? Peak. To the peak. Vayiben Shiva Mizbechos, and he built 7 altars, Vayal Parvayal Bamizbeach, and he offered again a bull and a ram on top of the Mizbeach. Chazal tell us, Rosh HaPisgah, that phrase, to the top of the Pisgah, if you want to see, I can read it to you, but if you hold the place, I can show it to you. If you turn ahead, yeah, page 1120. On page 1120, the Pasuk says, Pasuk Aleph, Vayal Misham, Vayal Moshe, Me'arvos Moav, El Har Nevo, Moshe went up from the plains of Moav to Har Nevo, Rosh HaPisgah, the top of the peak. The Rosh HaPisgah over here, where Balak took Bilam, was the place of that would eventually be Moshe's death. He took him to the place of Moshe's death. Although Bilam was a prophet, and Bilam knew things that other people didn't know, Balak was a kosem. Balak was a sorcerer, and he was an accomplished kosem, sorcerer. Chazal tell us Balak was a better sorcerer than Bilam. And therefore, Balak had ideas of where Bilam should stand when he attempted to curse the Jewish people. And his idea here was, he saw that the top of the peak was a place that had some terrible thing was going to happen to the Jewish people. He didn't know what it was going to happen, but he did see that there is negativity emanating from this peak against the Jewish people. He didn't know that it's because that's where Moshe is going to die, but he did see that, so he thought that perhaps that negativity could be channeled into a curse against the Jewish people. And that's why he took Bilaam to the top of this peak, hoping that he'd be able to curse the Jewish people. Yeah?
Okay, I know that each part in the Torah is not in chronological order, but I'm wondering, we seem to be at the exact same point, and this is with the wandering around 40 years in the desert. Is it wandering around 38 years in the desert? I mean, it's really like
this is at the end of the 40 years.
It's a 15-day journey. They seem to be at the same spot as they were.
When?
Is Bnei Yisrael at the same spot when Moshe sees?
They don't go anywhere. This is where they are until the end of the Torah. Once they get to Arvos Moab, to the plains of Moab, they're there until the end of the Torah. Until Yoshua takes them into Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
Okay, so he brings them and he builds the altars, like last time, with the bull and the ram on each of the altars. Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. Vayomer el Balak, Bilaam said to Balak, he said, Save kol al olasecha, stand as you are, next to your altars. V'anochi ikareko, and I will happen, I'll just walk around. Well, again, we'll see what happens. Perhaps Hashem will appear to me. I will just wander around. The English is, I will be happened upon here. Okay. Pasuk Tes Zion, verse 16. Vayikar Hashem el Bilaam. Hashem happened upon Bilaam. Vayasem davar befiv, and he put words in his mouth. Vayomer, he said, Shuvel Balak, return to Balak v'chose daber, and so you should speak. Chazal tell us that this language of Vayasem Davar Bifiv, and he puts something in his mouth, is redundant. We have the exact same phrase the first time. However, the first time, if you'll hold the page here on 866, turn back, please. Turn back one page to 864. Pasuk Dalit, verse 4. We have a very similar pasuk. Vayikar Elokim el Bilaam. Hashem happened upon Bilaam. Vayomrei love, and Bilaam said to Hashem, Es shivas hamizbechos arachti, I arranged the seven altars, va'al par va'al b'mizbech, and I offered a bull and a ram on each of the altars. Then it says, Vayasem Hashem davar b'fi Bilaam. Hashem put words in the mouth of Bilaam. Vayomer, he said to him, Shuv al Balak v'chosed aber, return to Balak, and so you should say. Now over here, the words, Vayasem Hashem davar b'fi Bilaam, and Hashem put words in the mouth of Bilaam, is the beginning of the statement that Hashem told Bilaam to do something, which is to go back and say these words, this prophecy, to Balak about the Jewish people. He was intending it should be a curse, and Hashem made it into a blessing. But the words, Vayasem Hashem davar b'fi Bilaam, is the beginning of a paragraph. Hashem put words in the mouth of Bilaam. Here, on page 866, it says, Vayikar, Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16, Vayikar Hashem el Bilaam, Hashem happened upon Bilaam. At that point, the pasuk could then just continue, Vayomer, and he said to him, Shuv al Balak v'choset aber, return to Balak, and so you should speak. It doesn't need to add in the words, as it does, Vayasem davar b'fiv, he put words in his mouth. Because we're not beginning the sentence there. The sentence really begins with Hashem appeared to Bilaam. And therefore, these three words, Vayasem davar b'fiv, he put words in his mouth, could be omitted. So why are they there? So Rashi explains in the name of Chazal that this is an analogy. Vayasem davar b'fiv, he put something in his mouth. Now, if you think about the animal kingdom, when do you put something in the mouth of a creature?
Muzzle
is put around the mouth of a creature.
In the mouth, they eat it.
You put food in an animal's mouth. Okay. How about a non-food item?
Like a
Medicine.
Okay. Think fish.
A hook.
A hook.
A snare.
Right. That's how you catch a fish. He put a hook in Bilaam's mouth because what happened is the first time Bilaam was expecting to curse the Jews and it turned into a blessing. Bilaam was caught off guard. Balak was caught off guard. Everybody was caught off guard. This time, Bilaam is wary. As we will see, Balak is also wary. We'll see that in a moment. And therefore, Bilaam does not want to go back to Balak if it means another blessing. So when Hashem told him, go back, Bilaam realized that he's being hoodwinked again. It's going to be a blessing, not a curse. And therefore, Bilaam didn't want to go back. So Hashem put a hook in Bilaam's mouth, and he reeled him in. He pulled him back to where Balak was, and forced him to say what he didn't want to say, which is the blessings that we're about to have now. So he returns to Bilaam, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Vayavo Elav, and he came to him, Vihino Nitzav Alo Laso, and behold, he was standing next to his altar, Visare Moav Ito, and the officers of Moav were with him, Vayomer Lo Balak, Balak said to him, Ma Diber Hashem, what did Hashem say? Now, we're going to contrast this pasuk Yud Zayin 17, where it says, Visare Moav Ito, the officers of Moav are with him. If you turn one page back to Pasuk Vav, verse 6, it says, the first time, Vayashav Elav, he returned to him, Vineni Tzavalo Lasag, he was standing next to his altar, who, he, V'chol Sarei Moav, and all the officers of Moav. Here it does not say that. Here on page 866 in Pasuk Yuzayim, verse 17, it says, V'sarei Moav Ito, not V'chol Sarei Moav, not all of them, because some of them had had enough. Once they saw the first time that Bilaam couldn't deliver, they lost faith in his ability to do so, and they checked out. So it's not all the Sarei Moav are not there anymore, only some. Balak says, Ma Diber Hashem, what did Hashem say? Chazal say, Balak here was a little bit mocking Bilaam. Bilaam, who's got this big shot, who says that he's able to curse when he wants to curse. And last time he tried to do it and it didn't work out. So Balak says to Bilaam, I know the game now. It's not in your power. What did Hashem say? He didn't say to him, what do you have to say? What did Hashem say? He's a little bit mocking Bilaam here. Bilaam, as you might imagine, did not take too kindly to that. And therefore, Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18, Vayisa Mishalo Vayomar, and he said his mashal, and he spoke out his mashal, Kum Balak Ushama, get up Balak, stand up, and listen. Hazina Adai Benot Tzipor, listen now, the son of Tzipor. So Bilaam's response is, who are you mocking? Stand up, I'm talking. You stand up when I'm talking to you. That's Bilaam's response to Balak, because Bilaam did not like the put-down that Balak used. And then Bilaam instead of curses, he blesses again. Lo ish kel v'chazev, Hashem is not a man who lies. Uven adam v'yisnecham, he's not a human being who changes his mind. Ha'u amar v'lo yaseh v'diber v'lo yekimena, you think he's going to say something and not do it? And he's going to speak and not keep his word? Hinei v'areich lakachti, I have been taken to give a blessing. Uve'reich v'lo ashivena. And the bracha that was given, I will not contradict it. Hashem already gave him a bracha, and I am not going to go against the bracha that Hashem gave them. Lo hi beat oven b'Yaakov, he did not see sin amongst the Jewish people. V'lo ra'a amol b'Yisrael. This is poetic, so the words really mean the same thing. Of course, there are slight nuances in the difference, but the central meaning is the same, that he did not see sin amongst the Jewish people. Hashem Elokav Imo, Hashem, their God, is with them. Usruas Melech Bo, and the friendship, the love of a king is in the Jewish people. Hashem loves the Jews. Kael Motziyami Mitzrayim, the God who took them out of Mitzrayim. Kesoafos Re'im Lo, they say here in the English, loftiness. The power of loftiness is his. Kilo Nachash B'Yakov, there is no superstition, they say here, divination, amongst in Yaakov, V'lo Kesem B'Yisrael, nor is there sorcery in Israel. Ka'es Ye Amer Li'Yakov L'Yisrael Ma'Po'al Kel, and I'm going to read the English, even now it is said to Yaakov and to Yisrael what God has brought about. The intention here is the Jews don't need divination, the Jews don't need sorcery, the Jews have prophets, the Jews have the Kohen Gadol, they don't need these things that we use in order to know the future. Hanam kalavi akum, they are like it, this is a nation that gets up like a lion. V'chari is nasa, again, like a lion, they rise up. Lo yishkab al yochal teref, they do not go to sleep until they eat of their, what they catch, their prey. V'dam chalalim yishteh, and the blood of the corpses they drink. This is, of course, poetic. The point is that they decimate their enemies in all ways. And you can't touch the Jews. Vayomer Balak el Bilam, Balak said to Bilam, gam kov lo sikavenu, gam barech lo sivarechenu. If you're not going to curse them, don't give them a bracha. This is ridiculous. I asked you to curse them. If you can't do that, don't give them a bracha. Vayan Bilam, Vayomer Bilam answered, and he said, El Balak to Balak, Halo dibarti elech alemar, I already spoke to you, saying, Kol Hashem deber Hashem, everything that Hashem says, Oso e'eseh, that is what I shall do. And therefore, I give a bracha. So we have to discuss this bracha. Chazal tell us, what does it mean, this is a nation, in Pasuk Chavdal, verse 24, that gets up like a lion. The English says, the people will arise like a lion cub and raise itself like a lion. It will not lie down until it consumes its prey and drinks the blood of the slain. So Chazal tell us, Jews get up like a lion. Now, the very first words in Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law, is Yisgaber Ka'ari. A person should be strong like a lion to get up to serve his master, to serve Hashem. A person should get up in the morning with strength like a lion to serve Hashem. That's the way we should get up to serve Hashem. But here, in addition to that, to the strength, the other point that's being made over here is Jews get up and perform mitzvos. We get up and we immediately perform mitzvos. We get up, we wash our hands, we say brachos, we daven, we immediately serve Hashem with words, and we don't just go about our own business. It's right when we get up in the morning, we are quick to already grab mitzvos that we can grab, right when we get up in the morning. And before we go to bed at night, we recite Shema. Also, we perform the mitzvah of reciting Shema, which protects us before we go to bed. That's what it means, lo yishkab al yochal teref. They don't go to sleep until they eat their prey, until they consume their prey. That means that we perform a mitzvah that protects us. The Gemara says that reciting Shema before going to sleep is a protection. It's a shmira. Well, of course, a person is most vulnerable when they are asleep. A person is awake, a person is still not perfectly protected. We always need Hashem's protection, but we feel the need for protection most when we're asleep, because there is nothing, we don't know what's going on, and therefore we are vulnerable. So by reciting Shema, that creates a shmira, creates a protection. Kriya Shema al Hamita creates a protection for the person who recites Shema. In fact, the way it says it in Shulchan Aruch is that if a person recites Shema, excuse me, and does not immediately fall asleep, then what one, what it is, it's not, this is not a requirement, but it is a, it's a good thing to do. What one can do is repeat the paragraph starting with Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, not starting from Shema, because that you only say once. But repeat the paragraph starting from Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha until the end of that paragraph. And if a person is still not asleep, to again start from Ve'ahavta. And to fall asleep in the process of repeating that paragraph, rather than counting sheep, to say that paragraph over and over again until one falls asleep. And there is an extra shmira, an extra protection a person is afforded when they fall asleep through the recitation of Shema, of that paragraph over and over again. Alternatively, some people prefer this, one can achieve the same protection by either saying or thinking words of Torah. That would also, if one falls asleep through that, one would also achieve protection.
You can listen to a shiur on your phone and fall asleep, right?
What's that?
You can listen to a shiur on your phone.
You can listen to a shiur and fall asleep. Right, you could do that. You could do that. It's a merit for those who fall asleep in the middle of a shiur, right? Right. So anyway, but this, so this is a, this is, so this is, so that's what it means when it says that, they don't go to sleep until they consume their prey. And waking up in the morning, so what do we do right when we wake up in the morning? We say moda'ani. Now moda'ani is not a bracha. Moda'ani is a statement. It's a statement of intention. It's saying, I understand that the reason why I'm here is in order to serve Hashem. I give thanks to Hashem that He has restored my soul so that I can serve Him. That's why I'm here. It's a statement of why I exist. That's what we do right when we wake up in the morning. But then we wash our hands, we wash Negel Vasser, and person goes to the bathroom, and after that one makes brachos. And the brachos are a mitzvah. Aholi Tas Yadayim, Asher Yatzar, Elokai Neshama. We make these brachos. After we get dressed, we continue with brachos, with more brachos that we say. Before we eat our breakfast, we make a bracha. We're constantly grabbing mitzvos. We're grabbing mitzvos. That's how a Jew lives their life. We look at life as an opportunity for another mitzvah, another mitzvah, another mitzvah, another mitzvah. That's the way we live. That is the strength of a lion, that we grab the mitzvahs. In Pasuk Chaf Gimel, verse 23, the Pasuk says, it's a little bit of a cryptic Pasuk. It says, as we already mentioned part of this, that there, Kilo Nachash bi Yaakov, lo Kesem bi Yisrael, for there is no divination in Jacob and no sorcery in Israel. As we mentioned already, that means that we don't need these questionable methods of finding out the future, but rather we can rely on Hashem, on prophecy, on the Kohen Gadol to give us the information that we need about the future. Then it says, Ka'es ye'amer li'Yakov li'Yisrael ma'po al kel. Even now it is said to Jacob and Israel, what God has brought about, has wrought. So there are two explanations here. One is the way they translated here in the Stone Chumash, which is actually the second explanation Rashi tells us, which I'll read to you. They translated this way, but the words in Hebrew are a little bit more explanation, as it says, they don't need sorcery or divination. Because all the time, anytime it is needed that the Jews should know what it is that Hashem is doing, and what are His decrees up in heaven, they don't divine nor do they commit sorcery. It's told to them through their prophets. Mahu zeres hamakom, what is the decree of Hashem? O urim v'tumim magidim lahem, or they are told by the Kohen Gadol through the urim Bitumim. So Ka'esie Omer li Yaakov li Soma Pa'akel, that when the Jews need it, they will be told what it is that Hashem is doing upstairs. If we need it, we will be told. That's one explanation. However, there is another explanation, and I'll read you the Hebrew and translate it. Od asid lios ace. There will be a time that will be coming in the future. There will be a time at the end of days. Ka'is hazos, similar to this time. Asher tigle chibasan le'en kol. That the love of Hashem for the Jewish people will be revealed to everybody. Just like now, Bilam says, when it's clear to everybody Hashem loves the Jewish people, as it is when they are in Arvos Moav, about to go into Eretz Yisrael, it's clear that everybody sees all the miracles. Clearly Hashem loves the Jewish people. Says Bilam, there will come a time in the future where it will also become clear to everybody that Hashem loves the Jewish people. Shein Yoshvim Lafanov, because they will sit before Him. The Jews will sit before Hashem. Velomdim Torah Mipiv, and learn Torah directly from His mouth, kibiyachol, so to speak. Umechitzasan lifnim mimalachei hashareis. And the Jews will be sitting in the inner circle beyond where the attending angels are able to be. We Jews will be on the inner circle. The attending angels, the Malach HaSharis, will be in the circle outside of where we are. And so much so, Vehem Yishalu Lahem Ma Po'al Kel. And they, the angels, will ask the Jews, what is Hashem doing? What are the decrees that are coming from Hashem now? We will have the inside story. We will be on the inside. And even the angels will be further out than we are. The Gemara tells us that in the future, when we receive our reward, the reward that we're going to receive is not a reward that today we can appreciate. It's not the kind of thing, it's not a physical reward like we're used to. It's not eating, it's not drinking. It's not something that we would use today as a reward. It's not money. That's not what it is. It's sitting in a circle. Tzadikim sit in a circle and they wear their crowns and they are interacting with the Shechina kiviyachol, with Hashem's divine presence. That's the ultimate pleasure. That's the ultimate goodness. That's something which is hard to appreciate what that is, but it is the best. It is better than anything we can fathom, anything we can imagine. Bilam is saying over here, when that time comes, it's not just that the Jews are going to be rewarded. The place where the Jews are going to be will be even beyond where the angels are able to go. The angels can't be there. We know that Malachim are incredible beings, and they enjoy a closeness to Hashem that is unparalleled for the time being. The angels, they are purely spiritual, and they do Hashem's bidding. They don't have a Yetzer Hara, and they're very close to Hashem. A human being in this world, there is a distance between us and Hashem. This world automatically creates a distance. Because we are physical, and because we have a Yetzer Hara, an evil inclination, and we have to fight it, and therefore there is some distance. And also, especially now in Golus, there is a Hester Panem Hashem, so to speak, hides His face. However, when we emerge on the other side, after all is said and done, and we have struggled, and we have fought, and we have grown, and we take two steps forward, we fall a step back. We take another two steps forward, and we fall another step back. And we pick ourselves up, and we keep on doing that for our entire life. And so does all the Jewish people do that. Then we merit a place even greater than the angels, because the angels didn't do that. The Malachim, when all is said and done, did not struggle. The Malachim did not have a Yetzer Hara to fight with. We do. And as difficult as that battle is, and as hard it is as it is to win, and sometimes we say to ourselves, this is overwhelming. Sometimes it's a person feels like giving up. But at the end of the day, we emerge greater than the angels themselves. And we will be on the inner circle, and the angels will be asking us what's going on with Hashem. We will have better information than even the Malachim themselves. That's what Bilam is saying over here about us, that when the time will come when it will be said to Yaakov and Yisrael, what is Hashem bringing about right now? The question will be asked to us, because we will have the answers where even the angels won't have the answers that we will have.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.